Hey, how's it going? Welcome to the show, y'all. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. What in the world? Knew that was going to happen. Should never check my balance right before the show starts. Negative 85? What the? Oh, God dang it. Anyway, what? You guys want to talk about the wars and stuff? All right, here, it's CNN.
In response, they don't want to be seen to be giving up the military space to the Russians here, regardless of how this signal goes off during these peace talks.
Hear what the man
said? I guess it's pretty much timed to play to...
Oh, yeah, we can't have the Russians blowing up ISIS, so we got to put our special forces in there.
If you will, I want to bring in Bob Baer right now, a former CIA operative, as I mentioned, and CNN intelligence and security analyst. You know a thing or two about Syria. You spent many years in Syria. There is no easy answer to the quandary, and some say quagmire, that is Syria right now. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But I guess the really simple question is right now, with what we've just learned, what could possibly go wrong?
Well, Ashley, you have to look at this in the context of the wider conflict in the Middle East, which is between Iran and Syria. The administration is extremely worried about the tensions. I mean, just the statements coming out of Vienna are incredible. I've never seen relations worse between Saudi Arabia and Iran since 1995, the Khobar Barracks bombing.
All right, I'm sorry. You know what? Larissa loves him, but I've just had it with Bob Baer. Give me a break, Bob. Everybody knows that it was Al-Qaeda that did Khobar Tower, stupid. This is a guy who blames Iran for 9/11. You know what, he's really good on some things, man, I admit that. But he ain't no Phil Giraldi. He ain't no Ray McGovern. But anyway, so the big breaking news is they're announcing that they're sending JSOC to Kurdistan, to Syrian Kurdistan, to help fight against the Islamic State. And, all that means to me is they've already been there, right? I guess I've just assumed that JSOC has been there all along. Or else, you know, who's lasing the targets for the planes? The YPG or whatever the YP, I can't keep all their initials straight anymore, but... I assume they've been there all along. The fact that they've been announced now is, it's political. As the man said, I hit the button on, hey, let's listen to CNN. And the guy goes, America just doesn't want to be seen as ceding the battle space to the Russians. Oh, man. But they weren't using the battle space that they had. They're bombing ISIS once every other day or so, a little bit here, a little bit there, enough to put on a show, get rid of some bombs. So it can replace them. But degrade and destroy the Islamic State? No. So, anyway, I'm sorry, but this is crazy. You don't have to know anything about anything to just think, to just ask yourself for a second, well, then what might happen? What's going on and who's bombing who? And we're going to now put Americans officially in uniform on the ground in Syria where they could possibly get bombed by the Russians. Since they'll be, of course, fighting on the side of, or for that matter, our NATO allies, the Turks, who've been bombing the hell out of the Syrian Kurds just, what, yesterday. I don't know if they're going to be fighting with al-Nusra against the Islamic State or not. Right now they're saying they're just going to be backing the Kurds. That's a little bit more politically palatable. They can continue funneling arms and money to the jihadists through their allies, the Turks, the Saudis, the Qataris. I don't know if the Israelis are giving them money and guns. They were giving them medical care. But anyway. But so now the Russians have come and said, that's it, we're putting an end to this. Which, as I was saying on the show yesterday, I was pointing out Robert Gates agrees with my conspiracy theory that was the point of all of this, finally, was to lure the Russians into another Afghanistan, this time in Syria, where they can be brutal as hell, but still never win. And, you know, it's funny to think, how this is supposed to be palatable to Americans. I mean, on CNN, they're just like, well, this is what the government says, everybody, so here's your daily announcement, or whatever. But I and you seem to remember 130,000 American soldiers were unable to defeat the Sunni-based insurgency there in Iraq War II. They ended up just bribing them, bribing the vast majority of them to turn on what was then the fringe of their numbers, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But they couldn't defeat them. In fact, if there was a David Petraeus victory of any kind, it was his victory over George W. Bush. When he explained to George W. Bush, we are not going to defeat the Sunni insurgency. We're going to deal with it. And Bush went, oh, okay. Huh. I've spent years and years killing these guys, but okay, whatever you say, David Petraeus. But anyway, don't worry. Now, the Delta Force can handle it. The entire American Army and Marine Corps, they couldn't deal. But JSOC can. Oh, and you can add the country next door to the battlefield, too. I wonder if you're going to have Americans fighting side by side on the ground with Al-Qaeda in Syria. I wonder if you're going to have America fighting side by side on the ground with Hezbollah in Syria. I wonder if America is going to go to war with Turkey over the independence of Syrian Kurdistan. I wonder if America is going to go to war with Russia over an accidental or an accidental on purpose confrontation between Americans and Russians over Syria. I wonder who among you who is not Israeli thinks that any of this is in America's interests. And I know that if you're an Israeli, then you go, well, of course it's in America's interest because no daylight. But for the rest of you, it seems strange to you. Yeah. Well, don't worry. The best war reporter around, Patrick Coburn, is going to be on the show today to talk all about it. Got elections the day after tomorrow in Turkey to see whether Erdogan gets his dictatorship or not. I wonder if Erdogan gets a dictatorship, whether the military will overthrow him and create a dictatorship. That happens from time to time in Turkey. I guess people have said that Erdogan has really confined the military to their barracks and has done an effective job of keeping them at bay. But I don't really know. It's a pretty deep state. Sorry if it's really loud and rainy. I don't know if you guys can hear it in the background, but it's pouring down-ass rain in Austin, Texas today. Tornado warnings and all the rest of it. I ain't scared, but it is loud. It's coming and going, you know. Anyway. So there you go. Obama, dear leader himself, supposedly is going to give an announcement on CNN today, or I guess on the rest of them too. I'm sure it'll start during one of our commercial breaks, so that I won't be able to pipe it live to you over the thing, or not the whole thing, because of Murphy's Law and all that. But anyway, we'll see what happens. And we already know, Barbara Starr, the Pentagon flack, posing as a CNN reporter, has already made the announcement. Oops. My phone was supposed to be on mute, but it was not. Anyway, there's the music. That means I can shut up now. Hey, in 4 minutes, the show will be back on. I'll have more very important news for you. Israel-Palestine, American police state, and the war with the Islamic State. A little bit of Iran nuke news. You'll like it. Hang around. Oh, yeah. Join up the chat room. ScottHorton.org/chat. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Okay, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. This thing is in the wrong place. That's the problem. Move that there. Put that over there. And that can go right there. Here. All right. Hey, sorry, I bet that was noisy and terrible, huh? God dang thing. All right. Yeah, man. So it's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Appreciate y'all tuning into it. Yeah, Patrick Coburn is coming up in a while to talk about the war with the Islamic State over there. And Dear Leader's going to make his big announcement. It's a funny thing, man. Always wondered, how are they going to turn the ship around after they've been backing Al-Qaeda against Assad all this time? Once they declare the caliphate, well, Christ, you ain't going to let them do that, right? I mean, come on. But they were so hell-bent on fighting Israel's war against the Shiite alliance, they couldn't be bothered, really, to turn the war around against a guy who basically is Osama incarnate, claiming to be not just the leader of an Islamic state, but claiming to be the Caliph Ibrahim, ruler of all Sunnis and all this crap. And it's taken them a year and a half, even more than that. I mean, I know they've been bombing them some, but come on. It's taken them more than a year and a half. I'm not justifying any of this. I'm only talking about from a third person point of view, sitting in the stands here looking at this, going, man, they've been fighting for their enemies for 4 years straight. Well, four and a half now, almost five. It's hard to turn around, and fight for not necessarily your allies, but fight on the side of those who are fighting your enemies. They can't really do it. That's why they're always trying to discriminate and parse really carefully. Well, you know, there's the Islamic State, and then there's Al-Qaeda in Syria, and then there's the moderate Free Syrian Army and all this crap. They're all exactly the same. I mean, al-Nusra and the Islamic State both claim Osama bin Laden as their founder and leader. And the Islamic State claims they're fulfilling his goals, which they are. Ayman al-Zawahiri says, no, you're doing it too quickly, that's all. We're supposed to be fighting now and caliphate later. And al-Nusra agrees with that. But same damn difference. And the Free Syrian Army is basically just a fencing operation for the Mujahideen. That's it. That's where America funnels their money and guns and tow missiles so that the Mujahideen can get them. And when Patrick Coburn or anybody else asks the Free Syrian Army guys, so what do you think of September 11th? They all go, yeah, good shot. And when he says, so what do you think of America? They go, yeah, suicide bomb them. Oh, and thanks for the guns and the money. They're no different. And then, but so here we are. Hey, if you're listening to this in MP3 years later or whatever, and you're not exactly sure of the context, this is the very end of October 2015. The caliphate was declared in June 2014. And only now that the Russians are, you know, actually mean it when they attack them. Again, I'm not justifying any of this. I'm just explaining. Now that the Russians are actually attacking the hell out of the Islamic State and showing the Americans up, they're going to double down their support for the Kurds. But they're also doubling down, apparently still doubling down their support for al-Nusra and their allies. They're now calling, what are they calling it? The Democratic something? What is it? The Syrian Democratic Forces. Hey, you know, whatever, man. If they call it democratic, then I guess it's all right. The Syrian Democratic Forces that are still fighting against Assad. And, you know, that's trouble right there, have an American-armed and American-backed Mujahideen getting bombed by the Russians on the ground. That pisses the Americans off. John McCain was screaming and yelling at the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff the other day about it. Oh, you're not willing to protect these guys that we armed and backed when they're being bombed by the Russians? And the chairman's saying, hey, you know, we are not recommending hitting back against the Russians. I mean, what do you want us to do? Shoot down the Russians? These people are absolutely crazy. But the thing is, I mean, enough of this, and the Pentagon and the CIA are going to start feeling just like John McCain on this issue. Yeah, it's thermonuclear fire they're playing with, but probably not a big deal, everybody, all right? So, don't worry about it, I guess. All right, and then, so here at Pentagon, we're in combat in Iraq. They're ditching long-standing pretense of advisory operation again. So, you know, fair is fair. There really is no such thing as Syria and Iraq anymore. There is an Islamic State between what used to be Iraq and Syria. What used to be Iraq, what's left of that is what I call Iraqi Shiistan. I don't know if there's a better name for it. I'll adopt it if there's a better one. From Baghdad down to Kuwait, that's Iraqi Shiistan. And to the Iranian border and all the Nasiriyah province up there to the kind of northeast up to Kurdistan. And then there's Kurdistan in the north, which has really been autonomous since 1991, but has been very freaking autonomous since 2003. Never occupied by the Americans. And they still have their deal with Baghdad. It's an alliance. It's a confederation of sorts. So you could say that's what's left of Iraq is two of the three pieces. But Sunnistan is gone. Their independence has been declared. And the Islamic State took the bulldozers and they destroyed the berm that separated Syria from Iraq a year and a half ago. It really is over now. And they got what they wanted, which was a Salafist emirate in eastern Syria, the capital in Raqqa there. And as the DIA warned, as Patrick Coburn warned, as I warned you on this show, man, the fire they're playing with, the Baghdad government doesn't really control Sunnistan. And if the Islamic State group goes around calling themselves the Islamic State much longer, they're going to try to make it a real reality. They're going to go ahead and take back over, you know, march back into Iraq. And I guess I did underestimate their ability to get the Sunni tribal chiefs on their side. But they forged their alliance with the Baathists, and the tribal chiefs were the third men and didn't really have a choice by that point. They got the old generals running their military. And, you know, I don't know. I guess what the hell do I know? But it seems like Margulies is a bit right and Patrick Coburn is a bit right. Margulies is what I would call the absolute opposite of an alarmist on the Islamic State. Ah, come on, these guys. They're basically still nothing but a militia. They're just more or less unchallenged in an area right now. But so, ain't no government, ain't no army, and they couldn't stand up. He says they couldn't stand up to the Jordanians or the Turks. They just take them right the hell out. On the other hand, Patrick Coburn saying, hey, they got at least 100, maybe a couple 100,000 men under arms. And in fact, you know, Joel Wing, this guy that writes a blog called Musings on Iraq, he compiled the figures and said, I think that 12,000-something Kurds have been killed, Iraqi Kurds have been killed fighting the Islamic State in the last year and a half, which is something else, man. They had admitted that they had lied about it all this time. Anyway. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. All right. Yeah, dear leader's going to give his worst speech here in a minute. I'd hate to change the subject before he does. U.S. to send special operations forces to Syria. That's Pentagon flak Barbara Starr at CNN. U.S. has secretly been in combat in Iraq for months, writes Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Last week's first of the ISIS war combat, quote-unquote, combat death for a U.S. soldier in Iraq gave way to admissions over the past 2 days that the Pentagon is engaged in ground combat as a fairly regular matter during what officials have presented as an exclusively, quote, advisory deployment. It's also apparently not new. Yeah, guess what? They keep Delta Force operations secret. And I read at Peter Van Buren's blog a great essay where he said, hey, why do you think they announced the name and the death of this Delta Force guy? To make your heart swell with pride so that you'll support the announcement of the escalation of the war. That's it. Delta Force does not announce their casualties. Delta Force doesn't even officially exist. Combat Applications Group or whatever the hell, you know, Newspeak, technocratic name they've given themselves. Task Force number, whatever the crap. They don't announce who they are and what they're doing. They never announce their deaths in combat. They always call it a training exercise way later. This kind of thing. But here, a Delta Force guy got shot and killed on a rescue mission, rescuing a bunch of Kurds. I don't know if they're soldiers or who they were, but rescuing a bunch of Kurds from an Islamic State prison. And they made a big public thing out of it. And why? It's just to manipulate your emotions, right? Like you're a tiny child. And they're trying to get you all red, white, and blue about this Delta Force officer who gave his life in order to help liberate some Kurdish Iraqis who are the only kind that we like anymore, so that you'll be for it when they announce the escalation of the war this week. Last week, this week. See how that is? Peter Van Buren's absolutely right about that. Gotta be. In fact, he even differentiates Delta from the SEALs. Ah, the Navy SEALs, they blab and brag about, you know, what badasses they are and the stuff they do all the time, but Delta guys don't. They just don't. Except that time that they bragged that they murdered the Branch Davidians. Yeah, they told that to Gene Cullen, who was a, isn't that his name? Oh, let me make sure I got his name right. I should have a whole setup of Waco clips ready to go at a moment's notice. Like making reference to that disastrous massacre. Yeah, definitely Combat Applications Group responsible for that mass murder. You think the FBI are brave enough to slaughter that many women and children all by themselves? No way. They need help from their betters in the Army. So let's see, where's my clips here, man? Delta. Yeah, Gene Cullen, I had it right. Gene Cullen, Delta firefight. CIA officer.
Approximately a year after the Waco incident, I was deployed overseas in Europe, and I had the chance to meet some of the Delta operators that I had met on previous assignments. They had told me on several different occasions during my meetings with them in Europe that not only were they forwardly deployed at Waco, Texas, but they were actually involved in a gunfight with the Branch Davidians.
Mm-hmm. And here is Stephen Barry, former Delta Force officer himself.
But I did talk to some Combat Applications Group guys, and they did confirm that, yes, portions of B Squadron were there pulling triggers.
Approximately a year after.
If Combat Applications Group was on the ground that day, actually pulling triggers, the origin of that operation would have come directly from the White House. It would have come from the President. Because Combat Applications Group is, for all intents and purposes, the President's private army.
There you go. Get it. Bill Clinton ordered the Delta Force to murder the baby children. See? There you go. You can read all about it. Just read Lee Hancock and the Dallas Morning News. She'll fill you in on all the details of the Combat Applications Group and their war against a bunch of Texas civilians. You know, it's funny, man. I see on Twitter all the time, I'm not a collectivist. I'm not saying collective blame or deserve or anything like that. But I see all the time cops killing people every day and people finally getting outraged about it. But I'm saying, you know what? If people had objected to the Reagan administration helping the Philadelphia police bomb move, then Waco would have never happened. If people had objected to the hostage rescue team shooting, quote, white separatist Randy Weaver's wife in the face, and she held an infant in her arms, if they had said, whoa, any FBI that murders a woman with a baby in her arms is gone, is dismantled. We will not tolerate it. You do not exist anymore. It's 300 million Americans versus you, right? You're done. You're gone. We'll tear your building down with our bare hands, brick by brick. But what did the American people say? They said, oh, her husband was some kind of Nazi or something. Oh, well, who cares if the FBI shot her in the head? After all, they're the FBI. They can kill whoever they want. They're the cops. They can kill whoever they want. That's what it means to be a cop, stupid. And the same sniper that murdered Vicky Weaver is the same sniper that murdered a bunch of Branch Davidians on the day of the final assault while the Combat Applications Group was machine gunning and burning the Branch Davidians in the back of the house. Lon Horiuchi was sniping them from the underground undercover house across the street. And you know what the American people said? Good. Good. 93% support for Bill Clinton sending in the tanks to murder the Branch Davidians. I want to get back to my game shows, my soap operas. The American people cried. I'm sick and tired of these Davidians. Yes, burn their children by all means so I can get back to my goddamn game shows. 93% approval rating in the USA Today poll from a couple of days later. After the fire, you know, finally went out. Did you approve of the tank assault that led to the fire that killed all the people? Never mind the machine gunning in the back of the house that we have not led you to believe never happened. They're for it. They're for it. And that's why you live in a totalitarian police state. Because you and your ancestors refused to object. I was in an argument with a lady today about the little girl that got beaten up in class by the 300-pound steroid freak cop. Arguing on and on and on that this little girl deserved it. This little girl whose mother had just died. This little girl that's 5 feet tall and weighed 100 and probably not into the teens pounds. This tiny little girl. Totally justified. Hey, he's an authority figure and she refused to do what he said. So there is no limit to the amount of force that is justified to make her comply. That's it. That's it. That's what Americans believe. This lady I was arguing with calls herself a libertarian. Oh, I'm a libertarian. Give me liberty or give me death. I approve of a cop using lethal force on a tiny little helpless teenage girl for refusing to answer his orders. He could have broken her neck. Her neck is damaged. Her lawyer says her neck and her back are hurt, and they must be. And that's why we live in a police state. And I'm not saying that's why you deserve to live in one, because I know you're the exception. But you're the exception. Americans are totalitarians. And they approve of totalitarianism. They yearn for it. They beg for it. And they refuse to object to it. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment. MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. All right, guys. Welcome back to the show. So Obama's jerking us around. He's going to make his worst speech in the middle of the Patrick Cobrin interview, of course, so that we can't listen to it. Piece of crap, coward president. Ever let you know how much I hate Barack Obama? What a horrible person he is. What a horrible, terrible person. Anyway, whatever. Hey, if you're interested in the killing of Jack Kennedy, I interviewed Bumper Hornberger about it last night. I really should have done the research first, but I didn't have time, man. I've been busy. And I really don't give a shit about Jack Kennedy. You know what? I'm sorry, I shouldn't cuss on the show. I just don't, though. Now, Hornberger believes, and you know what? I admit that when I read The War State by Mike Swanson, that I'm convinced, I guess, of the accuracy, perhaps, sort of that Jack Kennedy quit being such a monster and really saw the light after the Cuban Missile Crisis, that, you know, the Pentagon and the CIA are far out of control. The Cold War brinksmanship and the rest of it is out of control, and screw them. And as Hornberger really emphasized, Kennedy engaged in secret negotiations with Cuba and with the Soviet Union, completely cutting the State Department, the CIA, and the Defense Department out of the loop. But they knew about it. And so they killed him. And the funny thing about it is, I've always known that my whole life. Everybody knows that. I certainly was absolutely convinced from the time I saw the JFK movie. All you need to know, and it's funny, I remember I took my girlfriend and her friend to see JFK when I was 14. And they just sat there for 2 hours with their head in their hands, so bored, so uninterested, with no idea what's going on. And I'm sitting there on the edge of my seat, and I don't know who the Dulles brothers are and all this. So I'm 14 years old at the time. But when they said, oh yeah, and then the head of the CIA that he fired got a job on the Warren Commission deciding who done it. Well, I think that's pretty much the case closed. That's all you need to know right there, right? Come on. What am I, stupid or something? What are you? Nah. But Hornberger says, yeah, but what happened was at the end of that movie, they said, call your congressman and release the files, damn it. And so people did that, and they did release the files. And so now there's so much more information that it's just a hands-down case why they killed him. And then, you know, exactly who ordered the hit and these very specific details, not as much. But see, that's where I've always been on it, too. I realized I could read a stack of books taller than me, which I'm not that tall or anything, but I could read a stack of books as high as me about the JFK assassination and still not have firm conclusions about all of the most important points or whatever to make the case myself, so screw it, right? I mean, everybody knows they killed him for not being horrible enough and whatever. But, so my position hasn't really changed, but, and, you know, I don't know. The import of, I see why Hornberger takes it so seriously, because, you know, he's right that, hey, man, they created this giant national security state that was never supposed to be part of the American system. And then when a president tried to rein him in at all, then they whacked him. And people should know that, and they should, therefore, they should see this national security state that would kill their president as something alien to the way America is supposed to be. The conservatives sold the Cold War as a temporary emergency. Well, the Soviet Union's been gone. Christmas Day 1991. And that was that. The flag came down. The Red Army went back behind the Ural Mountains. 1991. And anyway, here we are still with the same empire that was temporary to protect us from the Reds conquering the entire planet at this point. But I guess part of the reason I don't get worked up about the Kennedy thing is because, again, I've known this my whole life. Everybody knows this. Your whole life you know this, right? I mean, come on. So it's sort of like, it's very elementary to me. It's like I mentioned from time to time the CIA selling drugs, selling cocaine in the 80s to pay for the Contra War, but I'm not that wrapped up anymore. I interviewed Gary Webb about it back 10 years ago or so, or whatever, before he died, and that kind of thing. But, you know, come on, man. Don't you kids learn this in elementary school that the Republicans sell cocaine? Everybody knows the Republicans. First of all, they use cocaine. I'm pretty sure that's what Republican means. A rich white guy who uses cocaine. Oh, and supports policies that lock up poor brown people for using cocaine. So, yeah, it's important, but, you know, I don't know. I'd rather talk about more important stuff, but more relevant, more new stuff. But then again, there are people who are just learning. So, I don't know. It's worth bringing up. And Hornberger, he's really interested in it, so he's written all about the autopsy and whatever. I got his Kindle book for $1, Regime Change, Why They Whacked Him. What's it called? Let's see. Regime Change, The JFK Assassination by Jacob Hornberger. I've got the Kindle book right here. He said I can finish it in an hour and a half. Sounds right. So I'll take a look at that, probably interview him again. But if you're interested in that, then it's liberty.me. The Future of Freedom is the name of the show. You can find it on YouTube. And every Thursday night, I interview Jacob Hornberger at liberty.me. And so last week we got into the Cold War a bit, and so this week we got into Kennedy. There, so look at that. Boy, I went way too long on about that. All right, later on the show, I got to talk about Israel and Yemen if I can. And then if I have time, maybe I'll try again to do my quick rundown of the Benghazi thing that I tried to do yesterday, except for the technical difficulties screwed it all up so bad. Because people keep asking me about what's the real story behind that, and I do have some things to say about it. But first of all, I got to do the American police state, because that's where we live. Teen attacked by school cop has multiple injuries and is an orphan who recently lost her mother. You know, the girl whose crime was she wouldn't give her phone to the Gestapo thug demanding it. So he beat the crap out of her. Could have killed her. And yeah, she's in foster care now because her mother just died. What she really needed was a good beating to show her who's boss, you know. Christ, some lady calling herself a libertarian in my Twitter feed this morning, for Christ's sake. CNN law enforcement analyst Harry Houck said, hey man, if an officer decides to make an arrest, he or she, quote, can use whatever force is necessary. Is necessary. But then he continues, so if you don't comply with my wishes, then I can do whatever it takes to get you out of that seat and put handcuffs on you. And you see exactly what's going on there. It's the Weinberger Doctrine, the Colin Powell Doctrine, that says you win immediately with overwhelming force. Even if you're going up against a third world piece of crap little country like Iraq, you hit them with everything you have. You attack, you know, Blitzkrieg style. Third generation war. And you hit every part of their government, their infrastructure, their military, their command and control, and everything at once. You win immediately. You don't even give them a chance to fight back in any kind of way. That's law enforcement policy in America. Now, just like the military, destroy your enemy. And I'm sure most cops have never even heard of this. You may have never even heard of this. This is alien to our entire society right now. Has been, I guess. But supposedly, way back in the olden days and all that, the theory was that the cop's job was to use the minimum amount of force necessary to protect the rights of people accused of crimes. That's the excuse for even having the county jail. It's not punishment. The county jail is where the government puts you to protect you from the lynch mob, since apparently you did something really bad. So that means even if you're a murderer, even if you're a child murderer, the cop's job is to protect you so that the court and the jury can have your ass later. See? Not Weinberger doctrine. Not destroy enemy. Protect suspect. Minimum force. I'm sorry, I know I sound like I'm talking to a kindergartner because this is ridiculous kindergarten stuff. And then look at this. Obama didn't even do it. Obama sent out his guy to make the announcement. He sent out his stooge to make the announcement. Y'all
they
look.
Have used to effectively make progress against ISIL. When it comes to northern
this
Syria,
coward,
in particular,
this ultimate weasel president of the United States
moderate
of America.
Opposition
can you believe it?
Inside of Syria.
And
who
know
have
this,
driven ISIL
whoever's
out of Kobani.
Next is
going to
be worse, too.
A few months ago that some of these opposition forces were under siege in Kobani.
Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Oh, hell, you guys, man, I must have screwed up the time zones. Or Patrick did, one of us. So maybe we won't be able to talk to Patrick. Maybe I'll hear back from him in a minute. Maybe we'll talk to him in 10. Or in 30. Or something. We'll catch up. Also, Jason Ditz has agreed to do the show today about Yemen as well. Considering calling Jason right now, but I think I better hear back from Patrick first before I go do anything rash. Figure these things out. I appreciate you guys listening to the show, man. That's cool of you. Let me get back to the police state subject here for a minute because I wasn't done yet. First of all, regarding the teenage girl that was beaten down by this cop, he was fired for it. He won't be prosecuted, but he was fired. Please read Dan Sanchez, the great Dan Sanchez from Mises and Antiwar.com and theantimedia.org, theantimedia.org. He's got this one called Dragged Across the Classroom Floor. It's time to admit that schools are prisons. And he's absolutely right. And it's a great piece. It's a really great piece. And so, yeah, there you go. Please read it. And hate government as much as me. Thank you. Next. Oh, you'll love this, especially you Austinites of mine. Citing federal immunity. Citing federal immunity, judge tosses manslaughter charge for Texas detective who shot unarmed black man in 2013. You may or may not know the story. Larry Jackson Jr. Ooh, doesn't he just sound guilty? With a name like Jackson, he must have done something, right, everybody? So he walks up to a bank that was closed because they'd been robbed earlier in the day by a white guy or a Mexican or something, had no connection to this guy, no reason to believe he had any connection to the robbery whatsoever. He walked up to the bank, but the door was locked, which is kind of a confusing thing for a bank in the middle of the day. There were people standing around. He saw people inside. So then I think the story was he maybe stood around and made a phone call or something, and then he tried to go in the bank again. Well, the cop in there freaked out and decided this was suspicious and that this guy must be a criminal. What are you doing here at the bank? And went after him. So Larry Jackson Jr., boy, did he make a big mistake. He tried to take off running to protect his life from this aggressive cop. The cop then commandeers, outright carjacks, this lady, this nurse, who says she wasn't even sure he was a cop, but he was threatening her severely that she better do what he said. Made her drive after this man, because you got to figure this detective is, not physically fit. Not enough to be a law enforcement officer, you wouldn't think. He can't run downhill from the grocery store there down to Shoal Creek, down 34th Street. Oh, I can't run downhill fast enough to keep up with this guy. So he carjacks this woman, makes her follow him, attacks the man. He, I guess, tried to run off the road down into the creek to get away. The cop starts fighting him, and then nobody knows exactly what happened, but the cop shot him in the back of the neck, back of the head, basically, where the spine and the brain come together there, you know, like you need it to be so you can stay alive, or else you'll die. And the family and their experts say he was executed. He was down on his knees. He was already beaten, apparently, and was just executed. And do we have any reason to think that that's wrong? We presume that he was guilty. We presume that if the cop says it was an accident, well, I aggressed against this innocent person. I pulled my gun on him. It went off. The bullet hit him in the back of the head. He died. It was an, I don't know. You didn't see, right? There's no footage, right? Okay, good. Yeah, it was an accident. Killed this guy. Well, guess what? The prosecutor in Travis County said, no, you know what? You're going to jail, and indicted the guy. And they indicted him. And they're going to prosecute him for manslaughter. But then guess what? He is part of a federal task force. And since he's part of a federal task force, that means he has sovereign immunity, just like Lon Horiuchi, the FBI sniper that murdered Vicki Weaver and numerous unknown Branch Davidians on April the 19th, 1993. What happened was the federal court ruled that the cop has immunity and that the Travis County District Attorney has no right to prosecute him. That if he is on the clock, according to the Washington Post version, if he committed a crime, but he didn't intend to commit a crime, in other words, he was on the clock at the time that he committed a crime, then he cannot be prosecuted. Get it? Being a temporarily deputized adjunct member of the FBI means that you have an outright license to kill. Not a license to kill in defense of innocent human life, just like you or me or anyone else, but a license to commit homicide against whoever the hell you feel like killing. A license to murder. And if the local district attorney attempts to prosecute you, the feds will intervene. Which is exactly what happened with Lon Horiuchi in Idaho. The local prosecutor said, you're going to prison. And then Janet Reno made it a civil rights case. I don't know if Horiuchi's lawyer appealed. I think Janet Reno made it a civil rights case, taking it out of state court, and then said, oh, yeah, sorry, but you got immunity, so whatever. You're free to go, Lon Horiuchi. Go murder some Branch Davidians for us a year later. Thanks. And sent him on his way. And in effect, here's the real point. In effect, all cops have sovereign immunity. Now, this federal statute that applied in this case is specific to federal agents or anybody who's a pal with one, I guess. But then I will again refer you to this blog, Simple Justice, a criminal defense blog. And it's by Scott H. Greenfield. And I tried to get him on the show, but he said he's just done being interviewed. He did it for years and years, and he just doesn't want to do any more interviews. So nothing personal, but sorry, no. Okay, well, fine. I don't care. I'm still going to read your blog from now on anyway. How do you like that? It's called Simple Justice, a criminal defense blog. I like following this guy on Twitter, too, because, well, I'll tell you another thing that he linked to that I have here as well here in a minute. But I really want you to take a good look at this. I want to reread this and really learn this as best as I can, okay? Check it out. It's called Tamir Rice's Basically Reasonable Murder. And it says that under the Bill of Rights, the only thing keeping them from murdering you is the reasonable clause of the Fourth Amendment. They can't seize your person in an unreasonable way. But then, reason, and that's it. That's all you got. Without the Fourth Amendment, they just round us all up and machine gun us for fun. For the bullet contract kickback. Reasonable in the Fourth Amendment is what protects you. But then he goes on to list the 17 other court decisions and laws passed and whatever that make that null and void, that make it so that it is virtually impossible to hold a cop accountable for committing a crime against an American civilian as long as they are on the clock. And of course, if they murder their girlfriend on Saturday night, the rest of the cops are going to cover up for them anyway as best they can. But if it happens on the clock, no need to even cover up. License to murder. Any badge of any of the 18,000 police departments in this country. License to murder. If you are a serial killer or some kind of a psycho or a sociopath who would like to murder people, you are a damn fool to do anything but run straight down to your local police academy and sign up. I think they know that. I think that's why they become cops in the first place, don't you? Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday. And The Future of Freedom with FFF founder and president Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. I don't know what happened with Patrick Coburn. I must have screwed up that time zone problem here. These things happen. He said he was 3 hours east of London, and you know what? It very well could be a daylight savings kind of a conflict. Some countries go with that crap, and some others don't. Who really knows, man? I don't know. Oh, I don't know. But if we don't get Patrick on, then we'll get him on Monday or something. It'll be all right. But here in just a few minutes, we're going to have Jason Ditz from news.antiwar.com, and he's going to help us out with the problems going on in Yemen. Until then, I'm going to go back to this disgusting, coward president of ours who announced that he was going to give a speech. He was going to announce the escalation of the war in Syria and Iraq. And then he sent his press secretary out to do it. What was the excuse for that? Did they even say, I'm sorry, I was on the radio at the time. Did they have an excuse, or did they just completely drop the idea that he was ever going to give a statement? And they just pretended like all is normal. What's going on back in the room there? One of his bosses from Lockheed smacking him around or something? From Goldman Sachs? This pathetic, coward president who sends his press secretary to announce the escalation of a war. Unbelievable, man. I'm sorry. I don't know. I've been waiting all goddamn morning for Barack Obama to give his horrible, evil statement, and then he sends out the clown. He sends out the damn nobody.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, the thing and the special forces, and they're going to the thing and shoot the bad guy, and then, okay, bye, everybody.
Oh, good job. These Democrats, I swear to God, they're just the worst people on the face of the planet. They're just Barack Obama. Scumbag. Oh, speaking of scum, let's talk about the Israelis. Israeli forces have killed 65 Palestinians this month, including 14 children. Oh, rest assured, all of them were invading from the country next door, Palestine, and they were attacking poor, innocent Jewish civilians inside Israel for no reason at all other than their race and their religion makes them hate things that are beautiful and innocent. Understand? That's how it works. Okay, nah, you know, they're under occupation for the past 48 years straight. They have no rights whatsoever. They're brutally killed, kidnapped, tortured. Their children are tortured, sent off to serious-ass military occupation prison for years at a time. They're terrorized daily, and they're threatened constantly and recently, as, you know, their friends and neighbors are murdered around them, their property stolen, their orchards burned. Then they see moves by Jewish fundamentalists to escalate Israeli control and the eventual destruction of the Golden Mosque and, the Al-Aqsa Mosque there on the so-called Temple Mount, whatever. So, they have no leadership to represent them. All they have is the Israelis bought and paid for prison trustees, the Palestinian Authority. And so, as an intifada, they have no leadership. There's no Hezbollah or PLO leading this thing. It's just regular civilian Palestinians attacking with knives. So that at least it's not cost-free. Think of it from their point of view. And they are attacking civilians in some cases, which I don't think is justified, but it sure is easy to understand and explain. Because they're not just under military occupation. Their land is being colonized by these settlers, as they're called. These invaders. These thieves of the Palestinians' private property. And so they're saying, all right, fine, kill me, but at least, you know, it'll go down in the history of this year that at some point the Palestinian people fought back again. You know, that's what it is. That's what every single one of these stabbing attacks represents, is just a statement that, hey, we are here. We have not given in. We just can't win. That's all. And you pay for every bit of this, the brutalization of the people of Palestine. 3.5 billion a year, plus all sorts of military aid and technology and loan guarantees and everything for free to subsidize the colonization of the West Bank and East Jerusalem, the military prison by the sea that is the Gaza Strip. American citizens, all of us, we pay for this. Not that necessarily we can do anything about it, but at least it's our responsibility to object, don't you think? I do. And then look at this, man. At Middle East Eye, Israeli forces threaten Palestinian refugees over loudspeaker. Soldiers, IDF soldiers, announced to the Ada refugee camp. To a refugee camp. They announce, if you throw stones, we will hit you with gas until you all die. The youth, the children, the old people. Bethlehem. Occupied Palestinian territories. Yazan Ikhalael, 17 was at a community center in Ada refugee camp in Bethlehem when Israeli forces stormed the camp. Ikhaliel, I'm sorry, man. How did I say his name? I don't know. Was using his iPhone to film as Israeli jeeps rolled by on one of the camp's main roads, shooting off tear gas, when a soldier began issuing a message to residents from one of the jeep's loudspeakers. "People of Ada refugee camp, we are the occupation army," the message began. "If you throw stones, we will hit you with gas until you all die. The youth, the children, the old people, you will all die." The soldier continued speaking in Arabic and issuing more threats and insults to the people of Ada refugee camp. But Ikhalel says it was the first line that really shocked people. "The most important thing I want people to see when they watch this video is to realize what the Israeli, quote, democracy really is. They have it said for us now. They are an occupation. They said we are the occupation army. It is proof. This is an apartheid country. It is not democratic at all. This is the first time I heard them say something like that over a speaker for everyone to hear," he continued. "We are the occupation army. We will use poison gas to kill you all," the Israeli government announced to the refugee civilians. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. And every day on this show, you hear me read articles by Jason Ditz from news.antiwar.com. He is our managing news editor there, and he is on top of it all day long. news.antiwar.com. Welcome back to the show, Jason. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing real good. I really appreciate you joining us, and especially short notice, et cetera, like that. So extra thanks there. Tell me the bad news, man. Give us the 101 on the Yemen war.
Well, unfortunately, it's about as bad as it's ever been, and it's mostly more of the same. 7 months in, the situation's really gotten no better. They're still fighting over Taiz. Huge civilian death tolls pretty much on a daily basis. And no end in sight.
All right, so I guess, you know, in the basic scheme of things, the movement that the Houthi Zaidi movement that now controls the capital city of Sana, based up there, I guess, in the northwest primarily of the country, and they control at least that swath of territory between the capital and the Saudi border, I assume. How much of the rest of the country do they control? Or first of all, is that even correct? And then second of all, how much of the rest of the country is in dispute at this point by Saudi and UAE, et cetera, forces?
Quite a bit of the country is in dispute. Taiz, most of the Taiz province is in dispute. The Marib province, a little bit further to the east, is also in dispute. Most of the stuff north of that is basically Houthi controlled. Aden is the only thing that you can really securely say is, the pro-Saudi side controlled, but even that seems to be somewhat in question because of Al-Qaeda. which has set up shop in the same town. And the Saudis have kind of gone out of their way not to confront Al-Qaeda militarily, which has made them kind of a welcome target for Al-Qaeda increasingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, they're using them because who's better at fighting the Houthis than Al-Qaeda? But they're putting themselves in an Ambassador Stevens kind of a situation there, it sounds like.
Right. And parts of Aden are so controlled by Al-Qaeda that they have the Al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula faction organizes parades through the city. Marches their troops through and... Now, the pro-Saudi people have been trying to get some tribal leaders to talk Al-Qaeda into leaving, but it's not going well so far.
Hmm. Now, is there any indication of direct communication and cooperation between the you know, I guess, government, pseudo-exiled government, the Hadi forces, the Saudi-backed forces, and the Al-Qaeda guys? Or they're just sort of eyeing each other across the field as they keep their eye on the same goal ahead of them?
More or less that. I mean, there've been some efforts, again, tribal leaders trying to get the two sides to talk, to do some cooperation, at least to not directly fight, but,
Well, now, was Al-Qaeda in Aden at all before, or this is all brand new since the Saudi war?
This is all new. Al-Qaeda was, before the war began, Al-Qaeda was basically on the coast a little further west of Aden. When the war started, they seized the city of Mukalla, which is along the coast quite a bit to the east of Aden, and they've taken quite a bit of the shoreline. And when Aden fell, they were pretty quick to establish a presence there.
And they really had been bogged down fighting the Houthis before this, correct?
Oh, definitely.
All right, so I'm looking at the map embedded in your piece here. Saudi airstrike destroys bus in Yemen's Taiz, killing 10 civilians. Medics say slain were workers heading to a factory. That's at news.antiwar.com. I'm looking at the map, and of course, we're talking about the very southwest corner of the Arabian Peninsula here at the Bab al-Mandeb Straits, opening to the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, where Somalia, the Horn of Africa, sticks out there. And the country, for people not that familiar, it's a lot wider on the map than it is tall, so to speak, a lot further east and west than north and south. And you mentioned that town, Al-Mukalla, east of Aden, where Al-Qaeda had been based for a while there, had some gains. But I look at the map, and there's at least four major towns to the east of there, including one apparently right on the Oman border, and I wonder which, if any, forces control those. And by the way, while you're at it, where are the Chavistas, the socialist movement in Yemen, which I know is still a strong thing?
Those are both good questions, and I don't really know the answer to either of them. The there really hasn't been a lot of reported fighting any further east than Mukalla. So the locals, I think, are basically in control in a lot of those places, which historically has been the case in Yemen. Like a lot of the poorer countries in the region, they never really had a national government that was able to enforce its will nationally. So local tribal leaders and the like were more or less able to do what they want in these sort of great empty expanses in these cities that are kind of off in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. All right, now, and this is really the most important thing, man, I should have started with, sorry, but the civilian casualties, and we've talked about this before, it's been warned from the beginning of this war, as you said, 7 months ago, that here's a society that imports 80 to 90% of their food. And on top of that, it's the poorest country in the Middle East, which is saying something, I think. Obviously, there are a couple of really rich ones, but most of them are not. It seemed real clear. And of course, with the war, you have total disruption of whatever market systems and distribution networks ever existed are all completely jeopardized. There's no gasoline. People are dying everywhere, whatever. Obviously, it's chaos. So And I heard, I think it was last week, probably you reported this at antiwar.com about the aid workers, I forget which NGO, warning of severe malnutrition and this kind of thing. But I wonder if you're seeing many reports about, or many in-depth kind of reports about just what is happening to the civilian population of Yemen, especially concerning their food and water resources here.
We're really not receiving as many reports as you'd think. And I think a lot of that is because there's a war going on over the whole country, which has made getting to a lot of these places all but impossible for reporters. So we really don't have a lot of accurate reporting on the ground of specifics going on in specific towns. But yeah, like you say, when aid groups have talked, it's never a pretty picture, and it seems like it's always getting a little bit worse. I mean, in the early months of the war, we were talking about the price of flour going double every few days, eventually hitting a point where the price of flour had doubled five or six times within a matter of a couple of weeks, and then you couldn't find flour anywhere.
Yeah.
And that was months ago, so there's been basically no flour since then. And, you know, all the more desperate sort of famine-type foods that people turn to, stored foods and things like that, are very quickly being run through. In a country as poor as Yemen, there was never a lot of that to begin with. Never tremendous food security, but it's only gotten worse, and it seems like it's only going to continue to get worse.
All right, man. Hold it right there, Jason. We'll be right back after this with Jason Ditz on the war in Yemen, y'all. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? $2? $1.50? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I was accused in the chat room of not paying attention to Jason and typing while he was talking, but that was him.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, my IM thing doesn't make noise. I hate that. I ain't mad, though. I'm just saying, it wasn't me being a jerk to my guest. I was listening intently. Hey, Jason, tell me, have the Saudis slash Americans, who, of course, are running the entire war for them, committed any war crimes lately?
Pretty much every day, yes. Although pretty much every day, then they, if a war crime gets any particular media coverage, they feel blanket denial of it. We had a recent incident of them bombing a Doctors Without Borders hospital, which sounds awful familiar because the U.S., of course, did that just a few weeks ago in Afghanistan. But apparently they have one in Yemen as well, and the Saudis bombed that one. Before that, we had the wedding party bombing in Mocha, which is down on the coast near Taiz, killing 140 or so civilians. Yesterday, of course, the article you mentioned earlier, the 10 workers being taken to their factory in a bus, and the bus gets bombed.
Man. And now, is there any indication that there's any end in sight here as far as, I don't know, quote unquote victory for one side or the other, or some peace talks that have any real teeth in them or anything, or this is just going to be like this?
Well, the problem is, if you hear the Saudis talk, they're on the verge of victory, but they've been on the verge of victory for months, and they never seem to take any new territory. As far as the peace talks go, the Houthis have been on board for the peace talks for pretty much from the beginning. Their only condition was that the airstrikes stop. But the conditions on the other side are for more or less complete surrender by the Houthis, disarmament, surrendering all the cities to them before they agree to even consider talks, which obviously isn't going to happen and has kept the war going.
Man. And now, so you ran this article about, you know, some in the White House are, you know, got a problem with this or whatever. Should we put any stock in that? Is that just they're trying to, you know, make themselves look innocent for their horrible blood-soaked crimes that they're 100% guilty of? Or is there really a split? Is there any kind of real talk in D.C. about pressuring the new Saudi king to, you know, figure out a way to call this thing short?
I think there is some real split going on there. I think a lot of people, when the U.S. sort of bought into this war and contributed airplanes and contributed ships to the naval blockade, I don't think they really knew what they were buying into. And the humanitarian toll has been so severe, I think a lot of them are having some pretty big remorse about having joined in the first place and want to see at least some effort made to rein the Saudis in to keep this from getting completely out of hand.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen this yet. Somebody sent in to us this morning at antiwar.com this piece. Italy sends more RWM bombs to Saudi Arabia. And apparently they got all these photographs of a cargo plane taking all these bombs to the Saudis for use on the Yemenis. So replenishing their stocks for more slaughter ahead. And yeah, this really does seem like not even really a war of attrition, just a war of bombing them but going nowhere anyway kind of thing. Like, say, for example, the war against the Taliban. Just whatever. There is no end in sight. This could go on at this same rate for 2 years or something if America doesn't call an end to it. Looks like.
Right, and I don't think there's any realistic chance America does call an end to it. A lot of the U.S. going along so easily with this war, I think, was a function of the Iran nuclear deal. We saw with Israel trying to placate Israel with billions of dollars in extra military aid, and I think this is just Saudi Arabia's version of that. Instead of military aid, they're getting unconditional backing for their war in Yemen.
Right. Okay, but so how are the Houthis hanging on? I mean, the Saudis don't have to be great pilots to follow American GPS coordinates and drop bombs on people's heads. And they do have some ground forces there. And the Houthis, why, they're just the Houthis. They never had sovereignty over anything but their own little semi-autonomous area up in the north. Now all of a sudden they rule the capital city and they're able to withstand at least an American coordinated, sounds like an American level aerial bombardment, and with UAE tanks and some ground forces on the ground, but they're just making no headway at all. How, don't tell me the Iranians are arming and funding them, Jason. I know you're not gonna.
Well, to hear the UAE and the Saudis, that they would say that that is happening, although they can't prove it. But the reality is a lot of this is just the Yemeni military was never particularly loyal to the pro-Saudi government and are still not loyal to them even now that they're nominally back from exile in Aden. So you see a lot of the military and a lot of the tribal leaders that would have formerly supported the government are on the Houthi side.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, they won't talk about this damn thing at all, really, on TV, but they certainly never really get into all of that. That, you know, Saleh and his men have now kind of changed sides, that the Houthis have an army that's willing to fight for them. They kind of took the army over. They didn't debotify it and abolish the whole damn thing. They kind of co-opted it. And I guess as long as they're paying salaries. But that sort of implies, to tell that story at all, implies some bit of popular sovereignty behind the Houthi movement. If others besides the Houthis are willing to be ruled by them and work with them to such a great degree, I mean, imagine that war is the health of the state over there. as the people rally around their country, whoever's running their country, as it's being bombed from the outside.
Well, right. And I think a lot of this is the old North-South nationalist split, too, because the Houthis are an overwhelmingly northern movement. The Shiite population in Yemen is almost exclusively in the far north. President Hadi, that resigned back in January, was born just outside of Aden in the far south, and now he's declared his new capital to be Aden. His troops are mostly flying the flag of South Yemen, not the flag of the Yemen that he was nominally president of last year. So I think for a lot of people, this is really just a new North-South civil war in Yemen.
Yeah, and maybe even ultimately a war of secession, and they're just going to break back apart again, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think the reality is that in most of the ways that matter, it's already happened.
Yeah.
And the real question is just where the border is going to be this time.
Right. Well, man, what a bunch of bad news. I guess let me ask you this. Any European nations trying to do anything to budge the blockade and allow escalation of aid or any kind of thing? Any sort of silver lining or, you know, light at the end of the tunnel for the civilian population there at all?
There really hasn't been. There have been a lot of European aid groups that have come out very critically of the blockade, as would be expected. But as far as European governments know, they're really just sort of standing by. Even when the British government made a sort of token expression of regret when the Doctors Without Borders hospital was hit, Saudi Arabia reacted with outrage to that and demanded a British apology and said it was inappropriate of them to be lecturing them on human rights.
Yeah. Well, sounds about right, I guess. And I guess as long as they have carte blanche from the U.S., just nobody's even really covering it, because I guess everybody already knows they can't do a damn thing about it. It's funny, isn't it, how overshadowed it is in even the international media by the conflict in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere?
It really is, and the fighting is no less severe, and the civilian casualties are no smaller. But somehow Yemen, with its barely functioning economy to begin with and its almost trivial amount of oil reserves, just doesn't seem to be a priority.
Yeah. Except for the killers. All right, man. Well, thanks very much, Jason, again, for your great journalism, dude. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
That's the great Jason Ditch, y'all. News.antiwar.com. All day, every day. News.antiwar.com. Thanks. See you Monday.